Hello, this is Nicolene Ambrose with the Tri-County Journal for Moultrie, Douglas, and Coles Counties, the Wednesday, June 24th edition. First article from the front page, Governor J.B. Pritzker to cancel 2020 state fairs by executive order, by Jerry Nowicki. State fairs in Springfield and DuQuoin will be canceled this year by executive order of the governor, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The state made the announcement Friday afternoon in a news release, noting the decision has prompted the Department of Agriculture to offer a safe, creative way to ensure youth exhibitors still get a chance to show their hard work. That will come in the form of a Junior Livestock Expo in Springfield in September. Illinois exhibitors ages 8 to 21 can show their animals at that event. The 4-H General Project Show will take place virtually with premiums and ribbons distributed by the Ag Department, according to the news release. Entry details for the events are forthcoming. The DuQuoin and Springfield fairs attracted more than 600,000 visitors combined in 2019 and are scheduled to return in August 2021. Last year, the Springfield Fair set records for the grandstand and near-record numbers for attendance. The Illinois and DuQuoin State Fairs have been some of my favorite opportunities to celebrate our agricultural communities and the residents who make Illinois so exceptional, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a news release. But it's because the fairs are such a treasure to so many thousands of people that my administration, like those of our neighboring Midwestern states, must make the difficult decision to cancel the 2020 state fairs in light of the risk posed by COVID-19. This is the right choice based on guidance from the Illinois Department of Public Health and other experts. We have to prioritize keeping our people safe. State Representative Tim Butler, R. Springfield, took issue with the governor's unilateral decision to cancel the fairs by executive order. I am tremendously disappointed the governor has canceled the 2020 Illinois State Fair, Butler said in a statement. Through state law, the General Assembly has mandated that Illinois shall have state fairs in Springfield and DuQuoin. This decision is yet another one in which the governor has exceeded his authority during the pandemic and will be in violation of state law. While Butler said he fully understands the health impact of COVID-19, he added, "This cancellation is another serious blow to the economy of Central Illinois." Springfield's economy has been hit especially hard due to the cancellation of most of the General Assembly's spring session, the shutdown of facilities such as the Bank of Springfield Center and State Fairgrounds, and the closure or work-at-home duties of most state government offices, he said. The cancellation of the Springfield Fair is the first since 1942 to 1945, during which period the fairgrounds were used as a World War II U.S. Army Air Force supply depot, according to a news release. The Springfield Fair was also canceled in 1862 due to the Civil War and was replaced in 1893 by the World's Columbia Exposition in Chicago. This year will mark the first time the DuQuoin Fair has been canceled since the state took over the grounds in 1986. We've said from the very beginning, our main concern is the health and safety of those who attend our state fairs, Jerry Costello, too, acting director of the Illinois Department of Agriculture, said in a news release. These aren't just fairs. They are economic engines for the Springfield and DuQuoin communities that highlight the best that Illinois has to offer and shine a spotlight on kids around our These kids work all year to prepare their livestock and projects, so we are determined to still provide them an event that showcases their hard work and perseverance through a very difficult year. Those who have purchased an Illinois State Fair Mega Pass, admission booklet, or parking pass can contact the State Fair office at 217-782-6661 or email agr.fairinfo@illinois.gov. Illinois remains in phase 3 of its COVID-19 reopening plan until at least June 26th, during which time gatherings of only up to 10 people are allowed. Gatherings of more than 50 people would not be allowed until phase 5, but entry into that phase is not allowed without vaccine effective and widely available treatment or the elimination of new cases over a sustained period of time through herd immunity or other factors, according to the governor's Restore Illinois reopening plan. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service covering state government and distributed to more than 400 newspapers statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Next article, Kayla Miller, RN, joins family practice at Horizon Health Paris Clinic. Registered nurse Kayla Miller has been a familiar face at Horizon Health for the past 12 years. While her passion for nursing remains strong, her focus has shifted to treating patients as a nurse practitioner in the Paris Clinic. As a nurse, I wanted to further my education and provide more for patients, Kayla said. I'm honored to be able to continue my personal and professional growth at Horizon Health. I have watched the organization grow in so many ways and am excited for the future. Kayla recently completed advanced education to become a family nurse practitioner. She supports the practice of Dr. Kumar Sodvadia, family medicine physician. Together, the two provide a full range of primary care services for patients of all ages. I'm excited to welcome Kayla to our healthcare team, said Dr. Kumar. I'm confident she will continue the commitment of providing the highest level of care to our patients and their families. Kayla began her career at Horizon Health as a certified nursing assistant in 2008. Over the years, she worked in various hospital and clinic departments, including the medical surgical unit, special care unit, and orthopedics department. She took very good care of my patients on the medical surgical floor, said Dr. Ronald Wheeler, orthopedic surgeon. I would recommend her for any medical problem. Kayla earned her bachelor and master's degrees in nursing from Indiana Wesleyan University. She completed education as a licensed practical nurse, LPN, and registered nurse, RN, at Danville Area Community College. Kayla was born and raised in Chrisman, where she lives with her husband, Tim, and three children, Danielle, Remington, and Charlie. In her spare time, she enjoys spending time with family, being outdoors, and riding motorcycles. Office hours for Kayla and Dr. Kumar are Monday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Tuesday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. They work together to provide same-day appointments. Their offices are located in the Paris Clinic. For an appointment, call 217-463-1946. Next article. Physician Assistant Carrie Fearday, PAC, joins SBL Effingham Clinic. Sarah Bush Lincoln is pleased to announce the addition of Physician Assistant Carrie Fearday, PAC, to its medical team at the SBL Effingham Clinic. Fearday has more than 20 years' experience providing a wide array of care at Sarah Bush Lincoln. She began her career in family medicine at the SBL Toledo Clinic, though she has cared for children in the SBL Pediatric Clinic for the past 15 years. She also has experience working as a pharmacist, which she credits with providing a good medical background. Fearday looks forward to developing relationships and providing care to people of all ages, including children, in the Effingham area alongside internal medicine physician Louis Schwing, MD, and family practitioner Paul Altman, MD. I love my career as a physician assistant as it allows me the opportunity to develop relationships with my patients and their families. It has been very rewarding and it provides challenges and continual learning opportunities, she said. Fearday has a special interest in pediatrics. I love the energy, excitement, and affection that children naturally share with others. I hope to make a difference in their lives, and I really enjoy watching them grow into young adults, she said. As a mom of four adult and teenage boys, I identify with parents regarding the challenges of raising children and appreciate the very different needs of each child. She added, I will miss the many families and relationships that have developed at the SBL Pediatric Clinic, but I am excited to practice in Effingham as my home is in rural Siegel. I would like to be an active part of the community, and I am excited to join Drs. Altman and Schwing at the Effingham Clinic. Firdae is a graduate of Southern Illinois University Physician Assistant Studies, 1999, and Purdue University West Lafayette with a degree in pharmacy, 1996. To schedule an appointment with Firdae, call the SBL Effingham Clinic at 217-540-6122. Her office is located at 905 North Maple, Suite A in Effingham. Next article, Eastern Illinois University selects Gibson as Executive Director of ITS. Eastern Illinois University has selected Ryan Gibson as the university's Executive Director for Information Technology Services, ITS. Gibson has been an EIU employee since 2004, serving the university as its Director of Web Services, 2004 to 2018, and Director of Marketing and Communication, 2018 to 20. His new role as Executive Director of ITS will begin June 15th. I've loved my time at Eastern Illinois, and I'm excited to continue my service to EIU in this new role, Gibson said. IT has a critical role to play in the future of student successes at EIU. We have a great team in place, and I look forward to collaborating with the campus community on upcoming IT initiatives. We're very pleased that Ryan has accepted this new position and that EIU will continue to benefit from his knowledge, talents, drive, and collaborative approach, said Dr. Austin Cheney, chair of the search committee and EIU's dean of Lumpkin College of Business and Technology. As EIU's executive director of ITS, Gibson will primarily be responsible for the coordination, supervision, and administration of programs and activities related to the operation of the university's computing, voice, and data communication facilities. He has earned an MBA and a bachelor's degree in computer information systems, both from Eastern Illinois University. Gibson resides in Mattoon with his wife Amanda and two daughters. He enjoys volunteering in the community through coaching youth sports and serving on local advisory boards. For more information about EIU or to learn more about its growing assortment of programs and services, visit the university's website at www.eiu.edu or call EIU's Public Information Office at 217-581-7400. Next article, Horizon Health to offer sports physicals in July. Horizon Health will offer promotional sports physicals at its Paris, Chrisman, and Oakland clinics throughout July. This special promotion supports local schools by donating a portion of the proceeds to booster clubs. Physicals will be performed at each clinic during regular business hours. Participants should call the clinic of their choice to schedule an appointment. The cost of a sports physical is $25, cash, check, or debit credit card. Insurance will not be billed. For each physical performed, half the fee, or $12.50, will be donated back to the booster club of the athlete's choice. The designation can be done at the time of check-in. Students under age 18 must be accompanied by a parent or legal guardian. Organizers are considering hosting a modified version of Back to School Bang for 2020. Follow Horizon Health's Facebook page for up-to-date information. To schedule a physical in July, call any one of the following clinics. Paris Clinic at 217-465-8411. Chrisman Clinic at 217-269-2394. or Oakland Clinic at 217-346-2353. Next, we have the obituaries. Richard A. Neuheiser. Richard A. Neuheiser, 53, of Tuscola, Illinois, passed away at 7:58 a.m. Tuesday, June 9th, at his residence. Private family graveside services will be held. Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home is assisting the family with arrangements. Janet L. Myers. Janet Louise Myers, 74, of Tuscola, formerly of Arcola, passed away at 4 a.m. on Saturday, June 13th at Tuscola Health Care Center. Graveside funeral services were held at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, June 17th at the Van Voorhees Cemetery in rural Hinsboro. Dick Miller officiated. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Norman W. Dorjohn. Norman Wayne Dorjohn, 87, passed away from this life at 3:22 p.m. on Wednesday, June 10th, 2020, at his home in rural Atwood. Public graveside services were held at 11 a.m. Monday, June 15th, at the Mackville Cemetery, Atwood, Illinois, with military graveside rites accorded. Pastor Dan Perry of Decatur presided over the service. Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home, Atwood, Illinois, is assisting the family with arrangements. Dale E. Burns. Dale Eugene Burns, 91, of Tuscola, passed away at 8:30 p.m. Wednesday, June 10th at Brookstone Estates, Tuscola, Illinois. Private family services will be held. Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home is assisting the family with the arrangements. Mildred M. Downs. Mildred M. Downs, 95, of Garrett, Illinois, passed away at 3:45 p.m. Tuesday, June 9th at the Arcola Health Care Center, Arcola, Illinois. Graveside services were held at 1:30 p.m. Sunday, June 14th at the Lake Fork Cemetery, rural Atwood, with Reverend Joseph Carter officiating. Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home, Atwood, Illinois, is assisting the family with the arrangements. Next article. Drake selected for Department of Energy Graduate Student Research Award. Hannah F. Drake, 2018 class, a PhD candidate in the Department of Chemistry at Texas A&M University, has been selected to receive a United States Department of Energy Office of Science Graduate Student Research Program Award in support of research addressing scientific challenges central to the agency's mission and workforce development. A native of Charleston, Illinois, Drake earned her bachelor's degree in forensic chemistry with summa cum laude honors in 2016 from Western Illinois University. Next article. DCHD confirms new cases of COVID-19. The Douglas County Health Department, DCHD, announces two newly confirmed cases, one male in his 70s and one male in his 80s, tested positive for coronavirus disease, COVID-19. Each is a resident of Douglas County, Illinois, and is isolating at home. DCHD public health officials are attempting to identify and contact known close contacts for both of these individuals. As of this date, Douglas County has 44 confirmed cases. Anyone can be an asymptomatic carrier of COVID-19, but those having symptoms of illness due to COVID-19 may have one or more of the following, ranging from very mild to very severe: loss of smell or taste, 60 to 70% of mild to moderate cases report a loss of smell or taste, muscle pain, headache, shortness of breath, sore throat, difficulty breathing, chills, shaking with chills, a cough and/or a fever ranging from low to high. Next article. Moultrie County adds COVID-19 cases. The Moultrie County Health Department, MCHD, has confirmed the 15th case of the novel coronavirus 2019, COVID-19, in Moultrie County. The patient is a male in his 50s and is recovering at home in isolation. Public health officials are contacting all close contacts. To date, 577 Moultrie County residents have been tested for COVID-19. Of those tests, 15 have been confirmed positive for COVID-19. Of the 15 Moultrie County citizens affected by the virus, 12 have been released from isolation. As public organizations and businesses reopen, it is important that everyone continues to use precautions to reduce the risk of transmitting COVID-19 infection. To help contain the spread of COVID-19, the MCHD recommends that individuals wash their hands routinely, avoid touching their face, bypass non-essential trips into the public, keep children at home, maintain a physical distance of 6 feet from others, wear a mask in public when physical distancing is not possible. Individuals should immediately seek medical attention if they experience difficulty breathing, shortness of breath, confusion, persistent pain or pressure in the chest, or a blush color in the lips or face. For more information, please visit www.moultrie-health.org and follow us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Moultrie County Health. Next, we have Memories and Musings by Sherry Sims. Outside dining has finally swept the United States. In 1968, on our first trip to Canada, we were walking from our hotel in London, Ontario, to the movie theater and were quite surprised to see so many restaurants with outside dining. Being small-town kids from the Midwest, we had never seen anything like this and thought it quite unique. The next night, we decided to try this new experience and really enjoyed it. We explained our surprise at outside dining to our waiter, and then who told us that the Canadians had been doing it for years. Their winters are so long that they like to be outside as much as possible in the warmer months. Back then, the Canadians did not have tents or umbrellas on the sidewalks. Many of the stores in their downtown areas had awnings for shelter, and some of the standalone establishments would build their buildings with outside dining in mind. We noted that many of the buildings had very large windows, which they would also open during the warmer months, and no one seemed to mind the bugs. Very few restaurants had air conditioning at that time as well. Just because we had not seen outside dining in the USA did not mean it did not exist. We were told that some of our warmer climate states had outside dining, but we would not see it again until our second trip to Canada 10 years later. That time we were in the larger cities of Montreal, Quebec City, and Toronto, and found the outside dining to be in greater numbers. Rue Sherbrooke, the main downtown street in Montreal, where all the large department stores are located, was almost hard to walk on the sidewalk because of the tables and chairs. In Toronto, it was impossible to traverse the sidewalks, and they had pedestrian lanes instead of bike lanes in the streets. Quebec City was the most interesting and quaint in their efforts to provide outdoor dining. The sidewalks on Rue Saint-Louis were very narrow, due in part to recent widening of the street, but somehow they managed to get 2-seat tables in front of their restaurants. The famous Chateau Frontenac Hotel had bought an old building behind the hotel and renovated it especially for outdoor dining. We ate there on our first night and dined on chocolate crepes under the stars. Wow, talk about ambiance. Hubby and I likened it to the fun we had back in the 1060 area of the drive-ins when we sat in our cars and the car hops brought our food on a tray and hooked it to the driver window. On another visit to Quebec City, the Frontenac Hotel had set tables out on the boardwalk overlooking the St. Lawrence River, and we could not pass up the chance to eat there and watch the cruise ships and boats while we dined. That year, we discovered open-air dining in the U.S. We decided to drive down through Maine, and we stayed at the oceanside town of Belfast. We chose a small cafe which specialized in haddock, fish, and chips, and sat under a beautiful fringed umbrella while eating and gazing out at the Atlantic Ocean. What an incredible experience! They also provided live music, and we would discover that many of the dining establishments there did the same. After every vacation, we would suggest outside dining to different establishments, but no one in our area was interested. It would be years later before a couple places like the DQ would put tables outside, and we really enjoyed eating there. In the last couple years, outside dining began to become more popular, especially with Mexican restaurants. One place in Evansville, Indiana was quite special in that they had tables on the new river boardwalk. We seem to gravitate toward outside dining with a view, and we have enjoyed dining while looking at both the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, the American and Canadian Rocky Mountains, the Smoky Mountains in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and the Teton Mountains outside of Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Dining outside in the Battery in Charleston, South Carolina was beautiful along the waterfront. It was similar to when we were in Nag's Head in an old historic bar with one of the best water views ever. In Park City, Utah, we had great food while gazing out at the mountains and went back for dessert just to sit outside and watch the fireworks. The only open-air dining I did not enjoy was at the Grand Canyon. I had stupidly rushed to the edge of the canyon as soon as we arrived at the hotel and experienced some kind of vertigo reaction, and the whole two-night stay was miserable, even when dining outside. We even enjoyed sitting in the rain while dining outside when we were at Yellowstone National Park. The meal started off in the sun, but an unexpected cloudburst sent most people inside with their plates in hand. Hubby and I were not about to leave our view of a mother and baby buffalo grazing just across the fence, so we stayed under our umbrella and enjoyed something really special. Our most unique open-air dining was at a little bar in wine country in Mendocino, California. Imagine sitting high on a bluff overlooking the Pacific Ocean as the sun sets over the sparkling waters and waves and eating a strawberry winesicle. I am not much of a wine drinker, but I certainly enjoyed my winesicle in this most romantic spot. Enjoy open-air dining! A recipe for strawberry winesicles follows. Ingredients: 3/4 cup rosé wine, 1.5 cups red fruit juice blend, 4 strawberries sliced. Combine wine and juice in a large measuring cup. Place a few strawberry slices in each popsicle mold. Fill molds with wine mixture. Cover with lid or plastic wrap and insert popsicle sticks. Freeze until solid. Notes: white wine can be substituted for the rosé if desired. Quickly rinsing the bottom of the popsicle mold under warm water will make the frozen pops easier to release from the mold. The silicone molds are much easier to work. And last article, reminder, income tax filing and payment deadline coming up on July 15th. Illinois Department of Revenue reminds taxpayers that the fastest, most secure way to receive a refund is to file a tax return electronically and request direct deposit into a checking or savings account. Taxpayers may file and pay their Illinois 1040 for free through MyTax Illinois. For the most up-to-date information, forms, schedules, and instructions for the 2019 tax year, please visit Illinois Department of Revenue's website at tax.illinois.gov. Illinois Department of Revenue offices are currently closed to the public. Taxpayers needing assistance can contact the department by phone at 800-732-8866 or via email, address available at the website tax.illinois.gov. That's it for today's Tri-County Journal. This has been Nicolene Ambrose reading with you, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.